We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Aikman is intercepted by Sam Mills.
Smith is going to go all the way. Panthers win in overtime.
Newton steps up, throws for the end zone. Olsen, touchdown.
Basking in the glow of a Spartanburg, South Carolina sunset, which, by the way, tends to run a little hot and humid and sticky. It's John Ellis live from Panthers training camp once again here on the Roar Podcast, Blue Wire. How are we doing today? It's a Monday, right? Mondays are always kind of tough and tricky and weird, you know, work week and all that, and get back to school coming up, all that good stuff. But it feels a little less like a Monday right now because I had a great time out here in Spartanburg with my daughter, Nina, 9 years old. I think you guys might have seen the pictures of One Panther Place. She was great, and she loves football. She loves coming out here and getting a sense of, okay, who's that guy? Where's his end? Let me get the chart out with the faces and the roster, and okay, I want to see number 63. Where's number 22, McCaffrey? She's just, she's a treat. She was my spotter today. So essentially, I sat in certain spots on the hill at one point. We went down to the fence, and she'd hold the roster chart, and she'd be my spotter. She's a good one, too. But I saw a lot of the dads and moms out there today with your kids and, of course, grandparents, and it was good. It's a good crowd. Good feeling out there in the upstate. It's so good to have this camp, at least here for right now, back at Wofford. And a few of you guys out there, I ran into some college kids who I felt like Steve Buscemi on that meme. How we doing, my fellow kids? My daughter's like college guys like you too? Like you're famous? I'm like, I'm not famous. Obviously, these are young men who enjoy torturing themselves listening to coverage of the Panthers. But they were so nice, and we saw some other families that, you know, sort of recognize what we do here, and it really means the world when you guys come up and just talk. I mean, not even about career and stuff, just how your life is doing. And one thing I like to ask fans when I see them at camp, and I try not to bother you. I mean, I could go up all day and just make friends and we could just chat, but what do you think about the team? How do you feel about it? And it's great to get some different perspectives, and I think most people are looking at things pretty similarly, and it's not because they're being influenced by, you know, our good friend Ellis Williams or our other good friend Joe Person or David Newton or, you know, a number of people that do reporting for this team, Nick Carboni, or even myself. I certainly hope that I'm not influencing your love or hate of what's going on for this team. If you saw our Twitter timeline this weekend, we were pretty vocal about a few things that went down at camp. But I don't think it was catastrophically bad. I just thought we'd share some perspectives from some former players, a couple of guys that work around the league in a scouting capacity, who reached out to me on Saturday when the news from Ellis Williams had first broke at camp. See, I wasn't there that day, but I was hearing from reporting that the touchdown thing had happened with Higgins, and he reached over the goal line, and then they did the big celebration with the red carpet. And Matt, there's no video of it anywhere. None. It was a 50-yard touchdown. You would think the team would post that, but the follow-up on that was Matt Rhule made some of the offensive players run. I'll leave it at this. I'm not going to spend a lot more time on this because there's a very good chance we could look back 6 months from now and say, why the hell did we spend so much time talking about this? But I will say Matt Rhule is big on process. Matt Rhule is big on, okay, it's the process that matters first. The results will come. So if the results happen, but it still doesn't justify the process because the process had nothing to do with your 10 wins, that's what some of the guys that used to play in this league are getting to. Yeah, I've got a friend named Luther Broughton. Some of you know Lou pretty well. At Richard84 on Twitter, he played for the Philadelphia Eagles. He did play for the Panthers, too. Played here with Dom Capers and George Seifert and some of the lean years, but he was one of the bright spots for that 98 team with Steve Berline. And I think he caught the most touchdowns for the Eagles in 2000, or maybe it was 99, McNabb's rookie year. Anyway, I always like picking Luther Broughton's brain because, and we got to get him back on this show. Because Luther played for a lot of really good coaches. Not just head coaches, but position coaches. I'm talking about Ray Rhodes, Andy Reid. He was offensive coordinator at one point for Luther was John Gruden, and he and John did not get along that well, but John didn't get along with anybody. John was very vicious early on in his career in terms of his expectations, his communication, and then that there's a long story that we'll tell another day. And, of course, I think we know now Gruden has some other issues going on, too. But Luther has played for guys like Juan Castillo. Ron Rivera was on a staff in Philadelphia that Luther was a part of. Sean McDermott, John Harbaugh. Luther has been around top-class coaches in the NFL that, you know, they have their processes and they do things a certain way. And when he's reacting in a manner, and he's not a Matt Rhule hater, I get framed as such by some of y'all. I think you're understanding, at least most of you now, where I'm coming from. Because it's only like a small handful of people that bother me anymore about this. When I dare say something in a critical thinking type of way about the head coach, it's the whole blind trust fan group comes out and says, oh, you just want to see him fail. I mean, you're just negative nonstop. And there's a couple guys in the media, by the way, that, and these are my favorite people, and you know who you are. It's like, You either follow my page on Twitter or you don't. You never like any of my content, which is fine, but power to you. I've never seen you retweeting anything of mine and saying, you know, follow John or have him on a show, whatever. The only time to make a comment about your content is a negative one. And luckily, there's only a couple of them out there, and they're lightweights. So the people that matter know where I'm coming from. They know where I'm coming from. They really do. My final verdict on what happened on Saturday with Matt Rhule and the celebration in the running is it really was something that a few players looked at that used to play in this league. And a couple scouts who work in that capacity were like, that's something you might want to handle after practice. That's not something you run right to after a 50-yard touchdown for a team that barely scored touchdowns last year and handle it in a way where it's very public. And the theme is just running. It's the running after a mental error, running after something is just kind of beneath the NFL structure. And I don't want to make a big deal about it anymore. That was my quick hit thought on it leading back from the weekend. It's just something to look out for. Because let's face it, if we're looking at a coach that's won 10 games a year for two straight years, I wouldn't question it. I probably shouldn't question it, but you open yourself up to criticism. Because the fact is, had you not called the entire offense to run after what was a fairly marginal infraction, which, by the way, was set up by a 50-yard touchdown. Let's not forget that. Maybe make the defensive back run that blew the coverage. I'd like to know, but there's no video. Nobody can film video. The team can. They've got an army of photographers out there. They post like 3 clips a day. Good ones, but I got to have some meat, man. Anyway, I love Panthers Digital. I love Panthers social media teams. They're great people. I'm not against Matt Rhule. I'm not even against David Tepper. I just want to see this team win. And I want to see him win for you guys because, you know, and my kids too have Anina out there today on the hill. She wants her team to be, you know, good and fun to watch. The practices have been fun to watch. Let's focus on that for a minute. So today, the quarterbacks. Baker Mayfield started out today on the first team once again, and that was not a big surprise. I think we've all come to understand what this is. Not a true exercise in competitive grit or competitive measurement. It's some type of jockeying of I don't know if it's politics. I don't know if it's the money involved where there's a need to put him in. I don't know if there's a scenario where Matt truly feels that, okay, Sam, we know he's not our starter, but we don't know if Baker's shoulder is going to hold up, and I want Sam to have as many reps as possible just in case Baker gets hurt again. I think he's overthinking it personally, but I'm at peace at this point by sitting back because I really do think at some point after these preseason games, you will see a decision made, and then we can debate later the merits of waiting this long to give one quarterback the lion's share of the first team reps, the quarterback that is the better one, by the way. And we'll underscore the reasons why throughout the show. Today, I want to cite our friend Ellis Williams for doing a great job charting. I want you to go to charlotteobserver.com/sports/NFL/Carolina-Panthers, or Book of Ellis on Twitter. When I'm charting stuff at practice, I'm looking at sort of the nuances of how the footwork looks for the quarterbacks. How do the pass sets look for Aquanu? How do we look in terms of secondary, the backpedaling, the agility, stuff like that, and the general vibe of practice? Ellis Williams and his staff have put together some of the best statistical tracking that I've ever seen at a training camp. And I don't want to overstate the importance of, you know, how did a guy do an 11 on 11s or 7 on 7s, but it's good data to have. So today, leading up to this point, and again, Ellis is responsible for a little bit of this data, so I want to give him credit where credit is due on that, but I've done some of my own research as well, and I'll cite the two as needed as we go along. But according to Ellis Williams today, and I was there watching these throws, so I can give you my color commentary on that, Baker Mayfield, his unofficial stats were 3 of 8. And now Baker did make some throws today. You know, 3 of 8, you look at it and you're like, ugh, you know, that's under 50%. We're all going to hell. We got to stop living in a world, first of all, because somebody texted me earlier and said, I live under 50%. It's practice, first of all. And completion percentage is not a big deal. And context is so important here. So let's take a deeper look at what we looked at. And this is kind of, as somebody asked me today on Twitter, did Baker really steal the show today? And I said, folks, every day I've been there, which dates back to a week from today, last Monday, I got a late jump here because of vacation. But there hasn't been a day I've been at camp, and I've been every one but one of them, where Baker wasn't clearly the better quarterback. Now, his performances have been anywhere from average to exceptional, but never below average. Never a moment where I looked at Baker and I said, oh, even that interception, oh, man, there we go again. You don't get that sense with Baker because there is a certain flow to his game that we've seen in the past. I don't want to overstate it or romanticize it, but there's a little more resiliency and mental grit and urgency of taking care of the timing of the routes and getting to the huddle and breaking the huddle with some authority and some command. The cadence is good. It's energy, and it's positive energy, and I think his teammates like him a lot right now. That hasn't always been the case, but I think you talk to people around Cleveland, you kind of get a sense of maybe it's not all bad with Baker. Baker today, 3 of 8. And he did some really good things in terms of placement of the balls. Very, very good placement of the balls. The vertical stuff continues to be impressive. He had a throw today to Higgins. Hollywood Higgins, who continues to be one of his favorite targets. And Hollywood spent a lot of time with him back there in Cleveland. Higgins ran, I think, about a 10 or 12 step hitch and sat down. And there were about two or three guys in a bit of a zone window. Baker ripped it, and the velocity got it there. So it's not Brett Favre, but there are some Brett Favre-isms to the way he plays. He's not afraid to, okay, I'm going to take a 3-step drop or a 5-step drop or even a 7. And on the longer step drops, I've got several progressions or reads or possibilities. But I know, like earlier in the week, I told you about the Y seam, which is basically tight ends that are attached to the formation or detached. You could look at it either way. Both of these tight ends were basically in a 3-point stance down on the ground. One was Trimble, one was Colin Thompson. Each time he went to the seam. So he set in his pass set there and got the ball out on the back foot. And both times He's hitting back shoulder seams, and those are an aggressive type of play. You don't see that from Sam Darnold, especially in practice. And I'm not saying Sam is playing safe here. He's not. If you're a golfer, you'll get this reference, the Chip Beck approach. Chip Beck was a golfer who back in the early 90s was in a real good position to win the Masters. And on number 15, when everybody's, you know, going for the green, going for an eagle, Chip Beck laid up. He laid up short of the lake, and many say that cost him the tournament. Sam is playing very much like a Chip Beck right now. He's efficient. He's completing a lot of passes. He's completing more passes than Baker. He completed 5 of 9 today. But the type of routes he's connecting on are not going to take you to the next level. We're talking about intermediate. We're talking about second, third reads he's coming into. The checkdowns. If it's something more than intermediate, it's not great. It's not on point. You know, Anderson and Mayfield are connecting now. And, you know, for all the talk about Robbie, no, don't bring him here, and all the negativity, and just understand that these guys are humans and shit happens. And if you start winning and getting a good vibe, I mean, Robbie tweeted today, you know, he's F the preseason, let's start today. You can interpret that however you want. I look at that like a guy saying, okay, I'm liking this. We're ready to go. Let's play. Of course, that could mean anything. I don't know. Mayfield's protecting the ball. I know he's not. The thing is, Baker's making good decisions. It's not he's out there just freewheeling it and screwing around and connecting on lucky passes. There is some Jake Delhomme in him. There's the ability to get quickly off that back foot and have a quick, decisive understanding that, okay, I've got receivers I can trust here. Let's go get it. And there will be some interceptions. Oh, Lordy knows. The stat we've talked about before is you've got the most interceptions combined in the league with Baker and Sam on the roster. But the one thing, and we talked with Ellis about this earlier on Fox Sports Upstate, the one thing people do not throw into that stupid stat is the fact that at a 2-to-1 clip, Baker has thrown more touchdowns than Sam. And how do you throw touchdowns? Well, you push the ball where you need to push it. You go back and look at Baker's tape. I've been posting clips of this. Baker was insulated by some factors that he won't have here. He won't have Nick Chubb. He won't have Kareem Hunt, although Kareem looks like he wants out. The offensive line is not quite as good here as it is in Cleveland. Bill Callahan is world-class, and they've got a great line. And they've got some good weapons. I think the tight end plays probably better. That's something I'd have to be mindful of if I'm a Panthers fan now, is Baker played a lot of 13 personnel last year, 12 personnel where there's at least three or two tight ends in the route combinations. And we showed you one last night. It was a flood concept where you had essentially one of your more athletic tight ends running a sail route, which is right underneath a seven or a corner route, and the corner route to the receiver's wide open at that point, and you're just flooding a cover three at that point. And I think they can still do a lot of things like that, but you have Trimble, you have Colin Thompson, Ian Thomas. I like Trimble. I think he's coming along. I don't know if Ian is more of a blocker now, but we've seen his athleticism, but I don't think anybody's as good as Njoku, and he was a prime target. And they had obviously some other guys on that roster too, like Austin Hooper, who have caught a lot of balls. But no, just to put a bow on this, because I don't think we need to belabor the point. We've done a lot of this talk. Baker looked very good today, yes. Baker looks good every day. Baker looks like he's commanding things. He said today in his press conference, I believe something along the lines of, you know, I'm ready for more reps when they're ready. He's been very professional. I'm not anticipating any sort of meltdown by Baker here. I think he understands. Like I said, I told somebody earlier, he gets it. He gets it. He understands what the game is right now. Obviously, I would imagine, I would hope that Matt Rhule is, you know, got his finger on the pulse of his locker room, and he's handling that side of things. At the end of the day, if that's going well, it's fine. He can make people run. He can piss fans off all he wants. It doesn't matter if his team is behind him. And they were behind John Fox from day one after he weeded out some of the guys that weren't tough enough to be part of his operation. When people got behind Ron Rivera, and one thing Ron never did, man, even when the struggles happened early on and even into year three, he didn't lose a lot of guys. He was tough. Now, he would yell. He would be very demonstrative in practice. But I don't recall a lot of times where he'd be making a grown man go run across the field. It's just something you got to think about. But as long as the guys in the locker room don't have a problem with it, long as the guys are, you know, the veterans are cool, who am I to say that Matt Rhule's doing a bad job? You got to start winning games, but if your process is working, eventually that should happen, right? Because the talent's there. The wide receiver room. Here's my top six right now, okay? DJ Moore, Robbie Anderson, Terrace Marshall Jr., who missed practice today. The deal with Terrace right now, he's dealing with a bit of a knee issue. And I don't think this is going to be something that's terribly long-term. I really am not that worried about Terrace. I think his day will be fine. In fact, it's a calf injury, not a knee. I'm sorry. The knee was Marcus Haynes. And Marcus is still nursing that. And I don't know if Marcus is going to miss considerable time. But I would say Terrace Marshall Jr. is right now third on my list because before he got hurt, and I think he'll be fine with his calf issue, he was making some damn plays. Ellis had talked about Ellis Williams from The Observer. When he charted plays, he had the most catches before things went down. So we'll have to see how things go when he comes back. But right now, he's in my top three. You go on down, it's Higgins to me at number four. And people are sort of giving me the C.J. Saunders hype. And I saw C.J. at close range today. I spent a lot of time focusing on the very crafty and very athletic wide receiver from Ohio State, number 81. I like him a lot. I'll get to him in a minute. But Higgins, to me, this is a kind of an obvious thing. And he's one of those guys I'm always fearful that gets cut just for no reason or for reasons I don't understand. But Higgins needs to stay on this roster. Higgins has a rapport with Baker Mayfield built in. They've connected 10 times over their careers with touchdowns. I don't think Carolina threw 10 touchdowns last year. I don't know if they did. But 10 times these two have connected for touchdowns, and they're doing it again. And Higgins, you know, despite holding the ball out, I would imagine that would not cost him a roster spot. Somebody needs their head examined if that's part of the eval process with keeping him around here. I'll say that. I doubt that's the case. Number five is Andre Roberts. I keep Roberts no matter what. Now, I think they'll keep six receivers. If they keep seven, one goes to practice squad probably. I don't see them keeping more than seven. But I'm keeping Andre. Andre is a bona fide return specialist. I'm not going the C.J. Saunders, Shy Smith route. I'm not going cheap because I don't have to. I'm not trying to be overly efficient with my roster spot because I know at any point, Andre Roberts can give me 6 points on a punt return. I don't have to worry when the ball's in the air that he's going to muff it in a situation that's high leverage at the end of the game. Andre Roberts stays on this team if I'm making the call. He's number five. And now number six, I've got a split between C.J. Saunders and Shy Smith. Right down the middle. Shy's had a nice camp. And I like him a lot. He's a local guy from Union. I hope he makes it. C.J. Saunders is hard to ignore. He's a slot player for the most part. He had a route today on Henderson that was highly impressive. Henderson caught up to him, but he put him in the dirt in terms of little pivot, little kind of hip lean he put into it. And I don't want to do the obvious Edelman-Renfro thing, but there's some Hunter Renfro elements to his route running. And I know that sounds like the biggest Ricky Prohl stereotype in the world. But no, he's got a certain way of getting out of that stem, out of that break at the top of a route, man. It is very clean. I like Zelstra a lot. I think he could still make the team because he gives you a number of things, including he can kick the ball, which you never know when you need that. Keith Kirkwood, good guy. I don't know if he's going to make this roster. I doubt it. And then there's a few other guys that are out there, obviously, you know, fighting for a spot that are more than likely not going to make this team. Just based on the numbers and talking about Andrew Parchman, I believe he's already been released. Rashawn Henry would be one. So I think that to me is the wide receiver room, and it's a good one. I mean, that's you can do some work in that department. Terrace will be a good player if he continues to stay healthy and he gets the reps. And I think at this point, Robbie, DJ, you can float anybody you need to into the slot. It's not like nickel corner where you need specialization there, if you will. I just think Andre Roberts, I would be disappointed if they didn't find a way to keep him. And if that means Shy Smith has to go to the practice squad or Zylstra has to end his, you know, term here, that's fine. Andre's a guy I've liked for a long time. He looks great at this age still. I'm not cutting that guy. I'm not. But maybe Matt Rhule does. I don't know. Offensive line, let's hit this quickly, okay? Akeem Ekwonu got first team reps today. Matt Rhule in his press conference was talking about the idea that okay, this is coming along a little better now, and we feel that Akeem Okwunu will start ramping up a little bit. And I'm paraphrasing here from what was said after the practice by the head coach of the Carolina Panthers, but it does sound like a very good opportunity is ahead for more reps for Akeem Okwunu, because the narrative coming in to this weekend, and it was not unfair, it was something that was put out there by the head coach last week that caught my eye, was very strong type of commentary in a press conference about how we're not giving away any roster spots. He's got to earn everything he gets. And fair enough, do that for whomever you might need to. As long as I said, and I say it again, that the locker room is good with how this messaging plays, I don't care. It's fine. Okwunu was the left tackle today. Brady Christensen ran with the twos at left tackle. He did not run with guards with the ones. That was Michael Jordan. I don't know if that's the best long-term plan. Pat Elflein is still the number one center. That's been that way since this weekend. Bozeman is running with the twos, but so is Mayfield to start out. So this is just my theory on this, and I've had some good people around the league sort of say, hey, you might be onto that the right way. With Bradley Bozeman working with the twos, the initial reaction from a lot of fans and myself was, what are we doing? What's the purpose here? And the more you think about the correlation between a center, language, cadence, chemistry, and a quarterback in the same department, they need to be working together. So having them together on the twos, I guess, does make some degree of sense. My bigger point would be, if you are trying to get Mayfield and Bozeman on the same page, let them both run on the first team, because they are better than the other guys that are currently on the first team. As I bang my head onto a microphone, God help me. It's not just me, man. It's just, I want to be on board with Matt. There's just these little things that, okay, so there's that. It is what it is, as John Fox would say. So Bozeman is still running with the twos, but so is Mayfield. So again, my theory is they're trying to keep those two guys together when they're on the twos. So Mayfield, when eventually he is the starter, is going to be well connected, or at least half connected with Bozeman, because they're taking half the reps together. First team O-line looked like this: Okwunu, Jordan, Elflein, Corbett, and Moten. Corbin was back from his hangnail and looked just fine. Moten looks great. Elflein is serviceable there. Michael Jordan, saw him, you know, have a few issues, but it's not unexpected. The second team looked like this: left tackle Brady Christensen, left guard was Horton, Bozeman at center, Cade Mays again at right guard, who looks good, and Cameron Irving, where he belongs, as your third tackle at right tackle. And so not much to add to that, other than the fact that the line, I think, needs to eventually be Okwunu, Christensen, Bozeman, Corbett, and Moten. And if you don't feel Christensen's stout enough or good enough to be the guard, you have to start really looking at this coach and this staff and saying, okay, can we stop overthinking this thing? You picked him on the second day of the draft. You were very excited about his acumen. I know people that scouted him out there at BYU on the West Coast. There's nothing bad about the guy. He's experienced. His arms are a little short. And the only reason that became mainstream public knowledge is because you offered it. Just think, at this point, you got to set your lineup and start moving forward. Now, if the juggling happens and they eventually come up with a concoction that needs to rotate at times, fair enough. But that started back, I believe, in 19. I saw Rivera trying some of that in that San Francisco game. And when teams start doing that, don't let them ever tell you there's a good purpose behind that. It means there's a desperate sense of, we don't have what we need, and in the middle of it, we're going to try to figure it out. It's the worst place you can be. And my only counterpoint to what they've done on this is common knowledge in the game of football. This is a very unconventional way of doing things in the NFL, and it was going to be that way anyway with Matt Rhule. But you don't continue to purposely, or purposelessly, if you will, take your best players out of the ones without some type of plan that benefits the entire group down the road. So I'm looking for that answer. We all are. I think at the end of the day, the five that we like the most universally will be the five starters. But if they're not, if it's Cade Mays, if it's Michael Jordan at left guard, if you know, if Horton plays left guard, I don't care. Just make sure it's the right thing. Just get back to a point where at least this is an NFL shop. It doesn't feel like, you know, Big 12 trying to rally from a one-win season back into relevance. We got to start looking at this through the prism of the NFL. And again, when you talk to a lot of people around this league, it ain't just my friends, it ain't just my contacts, my sources. It are people that you see across the country talking about Matt Rhule and some of his processes. It's not always a glowing review, and it is not personal. I can't say that enough. So if there is some type of axe to grind from anybody, fans of the team, anybody within that organization that I'm too tough or unfair, please call me and we'll have that conversation. You know how to reach me, but I'm not going to sit here and engage in, you know, the type of analysis that is not honest. There's a difference between being just an absolute batshit nutty Twitter poster and turbo tweeting nonsense. And we've all done that before. But when you see me at certain hours tweeting things, it's because that I'm workshopping some ideas. Because just so happens at the time, I've spent hours looking at tape, and then I have the conversations with people that have played here or scouted there, or an old coach from this team, or, you know, a guy who worked in the scouting department over there. And you don't just cherry pick people that will get in on the action with you. It's not an agenda. But these are valid questions that you just want some good answers to. And I don't think I'm ever going to be in a position to really probe for those. And if I'm invited into the press room to answer questions or ask questions of Matt Rhule, I think some people would be stunned as to how professional I'd be. You think I'm going to come in there and say, "Hey, Matt, what the hell's wrong? Hey, Matt, I got a question for you. What the hell are you doing?" No. I get it. I do this shit for Clemson. I do it for other, you know, major programs through my work with iHeartRadio and ESPN Plus and every outlet I worked for. It's just, you know, when I do this operation here, the podcast, or work with you guys on my website or on Twitter or do the radio show, there's never going to be a dishonest moment. And I was a skeptic from day one about a lot of this, and it's time to show some results. And hopefully there's a timeline there for the owner that puts some pedal to the metal on that. Offensive line there. There you go. There's your five. Ekwonu, Jordan, Elfline, Corbett, and Moten today. But don't get too concerned. You'll be fine. Linebackers in the front. We're going to do that tomorrow. We're going to touch on not just who's starting where, because right now you have a combination with Shaq missing his first camp ever. I'm not concerned about him, by the way. Littleton, Wilson are running with the ones right now as the two linebackers. LeVou is technically a Sam backer in this sort of sub-package, even in their base, so you count him in there, but he's really an edge guy opposite Burns. And then Brandon Smith, you know, it's one to keep an eye on because, you know, he had some mixed reviews coming out of Penn State as far as maybe tackling technique, but he's a really good athlete, and he's been running a lot with the twos, some with the ones, and those are the linebackers I can give you the most insight on right now. It is not a thick group. It is a thin group. It is a group that if you have one or two veteran injuries, you're looking at the possibility of having to play a lot of guys that don't have a lot of experience. So you want to make sure you keep these guys fresh. So good on them for keeping Shaq on the pine right now. And he's been very active, too. I mean, I think somebody called him Coach Shaq today, and I think it makes sense. Very much is. The corners, it was good to see a couple guys back today. Obviously, we've been a little bit concerned about the status of J.C. Horn. He was in pads today. The action was somewhat limited, as you would expect. I mean, this is a foot issue. They're going to be careful. They're going to be very diligent with working him back into the mix because the last thing you want from your former top 10 pick, who's now coming back into what essentially is a rookie season, you don't want him hurting that thing again. It's day-to-day. You want him in there, though. You want him in there to get some preseason game action because I'm curious to see how they move pieces around in terms of who plays in the nickel spot Hartsfield can do it and do it okay at times. I don't know if he's your full-time answer. I don't know if he'll need to be because Henderson has had a good camp. But as far as Horn goes, he started camp on the PUP list. And the team last night has reactivated him. So he's being cleared for individual drills. In fact, he's been activated as of last Monday. So last night was not the right answer. Last Monday would be it. So it's been a week since he was reactivated. So we're in a situation now where it is still kind of day-to-day in terms of the workload itself. But he's out there in pads. It's good to see. They're going to take it careful. I just hope that he gets into the season and it doesn't get into a Greg Olsen situation where here we go again. And now we're 5 games in. Missed 14 games last year. Broke 3 bones in his right foot. And that's a long road back. CJ Henderson, on the other hand, he had an ankle issue. And that ankle did roll last week. He sat out the weekend. And he was back today. And back in the sense that, again, when you're back in practice, you're back to whatever degree you can be back. So there were some good reps that he had in coverage where he was locking down on some guys, and you know, there were some good battles. He and CJ Saunders had a good rep together. I think really, really what you want here is, and you've seen this from the tape last year when Horn was so good in the slot. And people are going to say again, well, Horn's 8th overall pick. Why are you going to put him in the slot? The slot is a vital position, folks, in this division and this scheduling. Horn takes the slot for the most part. Jackson and Henderson man the outside where they're at their best. And you move forward and you try to keep that group healthy. To me, those are the two most important things with this team right now, the continuity at corner and offensive line. I know the quarterback's important, but we kind of know Sam Darnold's time here is done. I'm not worried about it. The running back group, again, you want to keep them healthy. You're seeing Deontay Foreman a lot out there carrying balls. I think he's going to be the backup. I think Chuba's going to be number 3, and then Christian, we hope he stays healthy. But those top 3 corners, if you can keep them together for at least 3/4 of the season in games, a full season's tough to ask. Maybe just 3/4 of the season. And the same can be said about your best 5 on the offensive line. If you can catch a break there, just catch a damn break, then I think this roster has a chance to really fight through some adversity and pick up 9-10 wins. I'll go that far. I'm reluctant to put any more on them than that because I think there's some things that Matt Rhule needs to prove on the NFL scale that I think he'd be the first to tell you. You know, you are what your record is. And there's no asterisk when Bill Parcells says that. It's not, you are what your record is, but let's remember we have a 7-year plan. No, until you win, you lose. And that's a coach told me that a long time ago. Till you win, you lose. Put it on a damn t-shirt, I swear. I want everybody to have a great experience of the rest of Spartanburg's camp, which wraps up on Wednesday. If you're out there tomorrow, come see me. I'll be hanging around. You'll notice me. I'll probably have on a Fox Sports Upstate iHeartRadio shirt, or maybe I'll just plaster a huge sign on my head that says, here, go to One Panther Place for some hot takes. If you see me out there, just come say hi. I had some folks today that I ran into, like I said, a couple college dudes and some local folks that I know that were good to catch up with, just fans, because we're all in this thing together. I mean, my place in this is whatever you wanted to make it for you. I'm not going to assign myself a role in your life. I'm just here to produce some content. I hope it reaches you in kind. I really do. But it's a team that's got some things moving in a positive direction. And for all the grief we gave Matt Rhule over the weekend, some of the jokes and funny things, it's a cruel world out there, and I'm not part of that cruel world. I can promise you that. It's all in good fun. And I will do as many DBO laps as I need to if this coach does what I know what he wants to do, win 11, 12 games and takes his team to a championship level. And from there, what the owner has assured fans is that this process will lead to what's called sustained success. I don't know what that is. I look at the Steelers and I say, well, Mike Tomlin's never had a losing season. That's probably the closest thing I can find, other than maybe the Patriots run with Brady. Not a lot of teams out there can just say, you know what, for 10, 12 years, we're going to be an 11-win team. But crawl before you walk and then walk before you run. You know the deal. The team right now is in the, I'd say, walking phase of this. They've crawled. I care less about the head coach these days and more about the assistants that have come in and a lot more about the players. This is really a players' league at the end of the day. And for them, some of whom I know personally, I'm really wanting this for them because it's a small window. I talked to, once again, Luther Broughton, a great friend of mine, and he reminded me, I think he got about 5 years in, and then it just, you know, it goes out on you. And he was a damn good player. Caught some touchdowns, man. He was a good player for McNabb. But even the best, you know, the window is very narrow and limited. And this is not, you know, Baylor, where you're building a long-term culture for your boosters and your fans and your program and your AD and your chancellor. This is about giving these guys in this locker room, Brian Burns, Shaq Thompson, DJ Moore, you know, veterans that have stuck this thing out. Taylor Moten, my God, I mean, he's been through all the shit. Christian McCaffrey. It's about giving these guys an honest chance to be successful. And the owner owes that to these guys in assessing Matt's performance this year. Matt owes that to his team. He owes it to himself, honestly, to be the best he can be. I don't think he's done anything so far during this camp that can put a damper on the positive of it. We can continue to debate, you know, rotating tackles, rotating quarterbacks, and the thing that happened this weekend with running, that to me will pass. Probably already has. But don't think for a minute if this team goes 0-5, 0-6, 1-7, 1-4, if they start 4-0 and we have another slide, we're running out of excuses, because what I'm seeing on the field is less and less mistakes from players. And good coaching is a part of that. I get it. Instruction is part of that. But you acquired these players. Corbett, Bozeman. That cleaned up a lot of things I saw last year that worried me. Baker Mayfield throwing passes on that field at Wofford that I have not seen from a Panthers quarterback literally since early 2019 at camp before Newton's foot went out. I mean, it's been like that. Kyle Allen and Heinicke and Will Greer, and Will was not a good camp player, not a good practice player. And Mayfield's got a bit of a spark to him, and there's just something there. And taking a kid of mine there today and kind of seeing it in their eyes, and you got to look at this differently than just, oh, a 41-year-old man, screw this and fuck that. No, you got to kind of get out there and get a pulse of what other people think too. Anyway, that's camp for today. Join us tomorrow for another edition of the Roar Podcast. You can follow us live at One Panther Place on Twitter. I'll be reporting from Wofford at 10:30 a.m. doing my diligence for the fine folks at iHeartRadio. And you can also catch us anytime when you listen to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, anywhere. Audible's got us. Just look up the Roar at Carolina Panthers Podcast. Ratings have been good lately, and you guys are everything with that. We can't thank you enough. For Billy Marshall, I'm John Ellis. Billy's back soon to join me on this podcast front. Have a great night, and we'll see you tomorrow for another edition of The Roar, right here on Blue Wire.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.